Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to you, Paranexus Universe. This is Doug Kelly, your host, and I'm here with my good friend Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Doug. How you doing, Doug?
Stupendous. And what is today? Thursday, January 28th.
Yeah.
You know, we're coming up on our 100th show here in the next week or two.
Oh, my God. We're going to have fireworks and free drinks for everybody that comes into our chat room and a hors d'oeuvres or something along those lines.
Can you imagine 100 shows, you know, and what, half of those were two-hour shows. Just think, all that time I had to spend talking to you.
Yeah, you're a lucky guy.
Yeah,
can I tell you
about it.
Yep.
Well, we welcome everybody to our show tonight. For the next hour, you're going to have the absolutely awesome privilege of listening to Grant, just like I do, all the time, right?
And to you, too.
Yeah, and me too.
So without any further hesitation,
yeah,
let our audience know what's going on.
Well, we had Dr. Roll scheduled for tonight, and unfortunately something came up at the last minute, and he's unable to join us, so we are going to reschedule him, hopefully for next week, although I don't have that commitment on that one yet, but I will post it on paranexus.org. We apologize for that late-breaking event. But that's what they say. This is showbiz, right, Grant?
Oh, yeah. But, you know what we're going to do tonight is Dr. Roll wrote a very interesting article about with that, you know, kind of talks about psychokinetic energy and quantum mechanics. And so we're going to kind of set the stage, and we're going to kick some of that around tonight so that, you know, maybe Doug will play devil's advocate, or I'll play devil's advocate.
He'll play the devil's advocate.
Okay, all right.
I'll play the devil's advocate for your side.
Okay, that'll work.
So we'll be each other's devil's advocate.
There you go.
We'll be each other's demon.
Yeah. Okay.
So, anyway, we are going to talk about parapsychology and quantum entanglement, but we're going to take it perhaps to different areas that we'll have an opportunity with Dr. Roll in the future show. So it'll be an interesting show, and we invite you to call in, ask questions in chat, get in on it. I mean, this is easy. It's laid back. We're easygoing. Grant doesn't bite very hard, and when he does, it actually kind of feels good.
Yep.
And so we've got some Paranexus people in here. You know, feel free to call up and join us on the air if you wish. You can call the number there on your screen, 347-945-7799, or you can use your click-to-talk button if you have a headset on your computer. And if you stay on long enough, the free drinks will come just in the last 5 seconds of the show.
Yeah, and no Well brands either, man. This is top of the line. Just put in your order, and it's on Doug and I tonight.
That's right. So anyway, so let's get into our topic at hand. That is parapsychology and quantum entanglement. And if you want to take a look at Dr. Roll's article that he had written about a year and a half ago, and I believe he presented that article in a conference in Europe. I know it's that much. I think it's Switzerland, but it's in Europe. I'm going to put the link to this article in the chat room. And it's on, if you're listening to the archive, it's on paranexus.org. Just go look for the articles. You'll find it. It's under parapsychology. the category in the article section, and the title of it is Parapsychology and Quantum Entanglement. And so in this article, which is it's really a paper rather than an article, it's a paper, Dr. Roll and Brian J. Williams wrote it, and it's about, obviously, parapsychology and quantum entanglement. Now, we've talked now and then, not very much, but we've talked a little bit about this whole quantum entanglement thing. Grant, you want to comment on that? Or
well, yeah, just to digress for a second, too, though. Remember, folks, that Dr. Roll is you know, an academic who's really a pioneer, along with several other fellows over in Europe, and they did a great deal of investigation and really set the stage for a lot of the ways we operate to this day. And with that being said, quantum entanglement is what Einstein referred to as spooky. And, you know, it's really difficult to explain, and I don't even think Niels Bohr, you know, understood quantum mechanics. And I'm not even going to go out on a limb and try to tell you I understand everything down to the finest details, because it gets so mysterious sometimes.
Say it ain't so.
Yeah, no, I'm afraid it is, you know. But, you know, the scientists have never been able to kind of make the big, you know, our big universe expanding in front of us, you know, because the big doesn't have the same characteristics as the tiny. And one would think that the tiny would be just a smaller version of large, but it gets really weird down there at quantum mechanics, you know. It gets really strange. And so basically quantum entanglement says that, you know, two photons are entangled, and it doesn't matter. And what it does is it just basically says distance is meaningless.
Well, yeah, these particles, they can split them and send them off in different directions. And it also is absolutely directly connected to the observance of one. In fact, you know, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle talks about, you know, you can't, so much in basic terms, you can't observe something without affecting it. And that's
right.
Essentially what's going on with...
And you can't isolate a single atom, because hence in Star Trek they had the Heisenberg converters, because there's no way that
yeah.
that you can really isolate a single molecule like that.
Mm-hmm. So these particles, the entanglement part is that these particles are communicating somehow, but they're not connected. And that's what this quantum entanglement's all about. They're entangled, they're communicating. They're still, one will react the same way as its counterpart, its other half, so to speak. And there's also been, and this is where the many worlds theory comes into play, you know, the multi-universe, or multiverse, I should say. It's all together. It's all the same ball of wax, so to speak. So, what does that mean for, you know, parapsychology, for some of these different PK or psychokinetic events? What does it mean for psi phenomena, you know, ESP in all its different forms? And that's really the point of Dr. Roll's paper and his presentation of this, and it's a very scientific paper. And again, for those of you who are just joining us, unfortunately tonight something came up at the last minute for Dr. Roll, and he's unable to be here. We are going to reschedule him for a later date, hopefully next week. We want to get him back on here. He was on in April of 2008. We had a great discussion. That interview is in the archives on paranexus.org. So if you want to listen to some of that, you can. But now, that was before he presented this paper that we're referring to. I'll put the article in the chat room again, just in case it's scrolled up. But again, if you're listening to the archive, go to paranexus.org, find the articles, and find the parapsychology category, and then look for the paper, Parapsychology and Quantum Entanglement by Dr. Roll. So let's talk about this. Now, before the show, Grant and I were talking a little bit about some stuff. And Grant, as you'd mentioned, you know, parapsychology proper has been very, very much, you know, trying to be part of mainstream science over the years. And I think as we get a little bit further into it, I think more and more people are, and I'm talking about parapsychologists, more new parapsychologists are starting to see perhaps some of the overlaps that occur. And that's something that we've maintained at Paranexus, that, you know, hauntings, abductions, and even some UFO sightings, you know, they overlap a lot. You take abductees, they have PK events. A large number of abductees, if not all of them, have some degree of psychic sensitivity. Now, we know from our haunting investigations that also these witnesses, these haunting event witnesses, seem to have some degree of psychic sensitivity. And so that kind of stuff, you know, is really expanding, in my opinion, the boundaries of parapsychology, and appropriately so, in my not always humble opinion. What do you got to say?
Well, you know, the interesting thing that about that, though, Doug, is, I sent around an article not too long ago to some of the folks at Paranexus that I had read. There's a physician, and I can't recall his name, who's done a lot of near-death research. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was so interesting about it was the fact that, you know, he talks about the nature of consciousness. And, you know, like, how could you possibly explain, you know, the fact that a person who is, for all practical purposes, is flatlined still can, you know, recognize things in a room? And I think there's a link. And what's happening is some of the folks around near death, and I'm not trying to digress too much here, have also seen a quantum link. So that energy is distinctly human. But, you know, I think that the big difference between the people in parapsychology, in traditional parapsychology, is that they've been trying to really work on things that we can measure.
Mm-hmm.
To establish, you know, the science as a legitimate science. And so some folks, I think, at times get impatient and go, like, you know, including myself, I go, well, why don't they investigate something like such and such, you know, UFOs or something along those lines, when, you know, how are you going to measure UFOs? Because for the most part, I mean, we know we can see them on videos. We know, you know, people have photographs, but we've all been down that road before, you know.
Yeah.
It's what it is, and it's, you know, it's not, you know, like something you can really literally sink your teeth into. Although we do have claims on one side that say they have evidence, but nonetheless. So I think that's why, parapsychology has been a little bit reluctant to stray, because they want to show their legitimacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that. I mean, I don't know how many people caught the show American Paranormal. It was on for the first time the other night. There were, to my knowledge, two episodes that were on the other night. One, the first one was on cryptozoology on Bigfoot, and I haven't mentioned this to you, Grant, but they did a nice job on the whole Patterson-Gimlin footage. They really did, and of course, Dr. Jeff Meldrum was on. That was the first episode. Let's talk about the second one, which they conducted an investigation at Eastern State Penitentiary. Where is that, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I think so.
Pennsylvania. And, of course, you know, many groups have been there. Many people have been there doing their investigations. But the thing that was different about this, and by the way, that show, American Paranormal, really impressed me. I mean, that it was the best documentary that I've seen, you know, in terms of modern investigative-type documentaries. The show talked about, or had scientists and engineers, for those of you who haven't seen it yet, but they were doing their investigations, and there's a parapsychologist on there, and he can, I don't recall his name, I'm going to have to watch it again, I am going to watch it again, it was that good, but he talked about something, Grant, that you and I have been talking about a lot, and that's the psychological aspects of this whole thing. And they were also exploring infrasound, and that's, you know, frequencies up to about 30 hertz. And they were focusing in on 19 hertz. And they had a frequency or sound generator, and they set it to 19 hertz. And they conducted an experiment in two different hallways of Eastern State Penitentiary. Now, that's, if you're not familiar with it, it's an old prison. and it's been abandoned for, what, since the 70s, I think? So it's been abandoned for 30 or so years, and it's big. It's set up like a spoke, you know, wheel and spokes. So what they did is they put the sound generator at 19 hertz in one hallway. They had selected two different groups, I believe, of people, or excuse me, it's two different experiments. They selected a group of people. They specifically chose them for, they chose some who were believers in this stuff, and it was two groups. And those who were really not believers per se, you know, they just had no opinion on it. And what they did was they took each group down the hallways, and those that were predisposed to a belief system, and I think I'm merging my two experiments here, but they took the groups down the hallways. Those who were disposed or predisposed to believing in paranormal phenomena felt weird. They would feel themselves. They would feel a presence. They would feel heavy. They would feel sadness. They would feel all this stuff. Now, the group that really didn't have a belief system that way really didn't pick up on much at all, really didn't feel anything. And I apologize. They did two different experiments. This is the first one. The second one now is where they used the sound generator with the 19 hertz. And when they took the groups down that hallway, they all felt it. Because, you know, that frequency you can't hear with your ears. It's below the human threshold. And they felt it, and they felt sadness, and they felt all these different things. And the hallway where there was no sound generator, you know, it was nothing. They didn't pick up on anything. And so, in my opinion, that was groundbreaking, because now you're talking about something that you can measure, right?
Well, you know, that's an interesting experiment, and I know that in Europe they've done that before. And they did the experiment down in the catacombs, I think, under Edinburgh, and with two separate control groups and everything in a control group, and basically it came out exactly what you said, Doug, where folks, if they had a predisposition or belief system in place, then a lot of times they would be more inclined to have some sort of experience. But for low frequency sound, you know, I think that what most people don't realize, or what we forget about, I mean, we're fish swimming in an ocean of air and all these chemicals, and we don't think about the impact of sound waves. I mean, sound waves can kill people. Now, the Army or the services for about the past 5 or 10 years have been working, and I don't know if anybody in our audience is familiar with this, on working on crowd control devices that are non-lethal that work around sound waves. And the sound waves can make you feel so uncomfortable, low-frequency sound waves, that you'll have nausea, headaches, you'll have fear. It's just strange the way the low-frequency sound waves work, because it's kind of like thunder, you know. Sometimes our body can feel thunder more than we can hear it. We can feel the vibration from that huge, gigantic wave. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we are in a situation, now I'm not, maybe you are, Doug, I'm not aware, or maybe somebody in our audience is, what would naturally cause those low frequency sound waves?
Yeah, you know, there's some different natural phenomena. I mean, there's some trains going by or trucks. I mean, you've ever been on a bridge and a truck rolls overhead? I mean, you can almost feel it. And different things of that nature. And, you know, if our audience has got any ideas.
Well, you know, maybe I'm wondering if it could be geothermic activity.
Well,
too,
who
you
says
know?
It could be?
You know, if it's down there and it's sending out sound waves from what's going on deep down inside. And I think humans, since that's not in our hearing range, you know, we're oblivious to it. And so we interpret it when it's something actually physiological as something supernatural.
So, you know, after watching that show, it really hit me. I mean, I appreciated that show. It really hit me. Shouldn't we, as investigators, at least have in our tool collection a sound detector? You know, we need to be able to try to get something that can pick up on extremely low frequencies, ELFs. You know, is it going on? I mean, think about it. We use an EMF meter and to pick up on some of that stuff, because those low frequencies of radio waves can also cause that feeling of being watched and heavy.
A number of things can cause it, you know. If you had chemicals in the air, I mean, and I think that we're all pretty much aware of that, but it's just, you know, people don't think of, like, how, we don't even know how, you know, how our bodies really react to certain magnetic fields. Well, we do, but, you know, to less subtle or the combinations,
right,
or
low intensity.
Yeah. Yep.
Just like the sound waves, you know. And if our audience who's listening to us now, if you got want to chime in on this conversation, we invite you to give us a call. Use the click to talk button on your screen there if you have a computer headset, or give us a call on the number there on your page. We'd love to have you call in and share your perspectives on this. If you have something to share, if you have questions, type them in the chat. We'll take them there too. So,
you know, the thing, Doug, that when Dr. Roll was here, I think, you know, the first time he made his appearance, you and I think I can speak safely for you. You and I were just, you know, really, we were just thrilled to have him on the show. But
absolutely.
He also made a big impression on me. I think that night I really had an epiphany.
Yeah.
And my epiphany was, we were talking at one point, and Dr. Roll was not comfortable with the word paranormal.
Not at all.
And he let us know that.
Yeah.
And so you asked him to clarify that for us. And basically what he said was, well, maybe it's not paranormal. Maybe it's something that's intrinsically human.
Mm-hmm.
And applied that. And for me, it was like, whoa, you know, if somebody is truly, if we truly have the ability, or we're radiating psychokinetic energy in an unharnessed sort of way, if for some reason we do something, or something in the environment or whatever triggers it to be focused momentarily, well then, how would we explain that? If something moves and we know we didn't move it consciously, you know, we explain it away as a ghost.
Right. When it may not be that at all.
Well, how do we know it's our abilities that we just don't know? Now, that's not a new idea.
No.
But nonetheless, if everybody addresses it that way, then we're no different than the cavemen, you know, who covered their heads when you know, lightning went off and a clap of thunder.
I agree. So
completely confusing what it is.
But the new thing, at least to so many people, is that when something like that happens, it's easy to think, oh, crap, who's here? You know, is there some spirit here moving stuff? And now the new thought is, well, maybe it's us. Is there stress going on? Is there something going on around us? What's the circumstances? What's the scenario? That's parapsychology. Let's rule that out. Because I think, and you and I have been talking about this for well over a year and a half, about the psychology of things and how much that's a part of things, or how much we suspect it's a part of things. And so, you know, that's the thing, that's the direction to go in. We've got to rule this stuff out. That's parapsychology. And
the really wonderful thing about embracing parapsychology is the fact that its very foundation is on psychological theory.
Mm-hmm.
And so it automatically is assuming for that variable that this is, and that's what Dr. Roll so deftly pointed out that night. You know, you're losing sight. And unfortunately, I think in mainstream science, they lose sight of that too. Then again, look, a lot of times, you know, traditional people in medicine will just poo-poo what neuroscience say because they'll go like, well, if you can't show it to me, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know?
Scientists who poo-poo psychologists.
Of course.
You know, it's not automatically an accepted science, so to speak. And that's what we were talking, you and I were talking about before the show, that mainstream parapsychology is really, and you know, this is my opinion. I'm not going to speak for all of, and it certainly wouldn't apply to all of them. But in my impressions of parapsychology and parapsychologists as mainstream parapsychologists, that they are trying to be part of mainstream science. And I think they should be, but it's almost like they want so badly to be a part of that, to be accepted, that you know they're almost closing their minds. Now,
Well, I think they've eliminated a lot of the risk, or what we in the field who are trying to maybe do some things that are a little bit more out on the fringe that they would be comfortable with. They're just trying to do stuff that they know.
But and so in my opinion, this is all just my opinion, but in my mind, parapsychology, I love the term because para means beyond. And obviously psychology, which is a huge interest of mine, and how it affects all the stuff going on. So now we've got parapsychology. And so in my opinion, that encompasses anything to do with humans and the mind. So it overlaps. Like, what about abduction phenomena? I mean, there are things that happen with abductees that are happening with those who experience haunting phenomena. And, and PK events. And so I'm looking at parapsychology now as a much broader field than perhaps a lot of, the mainstream or the older school parapsychologists. All I'm saying is that the mind, we need to expand this, because there's more going on here that can refer to more than just ESP-related phenomena. It's more than that. There's stuff going on, even with the human mind, and the reasons why people do that. And I realize that's more para-anthropology, as Grant so aptly described to me one day. I love that term.
But, but the whole thing is, though, is that I think, and I think if Dr. Roll was here, he'd agree with us, there's this interconnectivity. And I think that this, to me personally, the real beauty about quantum entanglement and quantum physics is that there's multiple possibilities. And that, to me, it reconfirms a belief that I have, that all of us, no matter how different we are from each other, are all interconnected.
Absolutely.
And we know genetically we're interconnected. Mm-hmm. But you know what? This interconnection, I think, is almost on a level that transcends consciousness. And it's absolutely fascinating. And I think if we look at it that way, that interconnectedness, it may explain a lot of things psychologically as we go farther down the road.
I think it's fascinating, Grant. I mean, this whole realm of parapsychology fascinates me, and I'm talking about my expanded opinion of it. The other night on that American Paranormal show that I mentioned earlier, it was almost an epiphany for me in a way, and no, it didn't hurt. It was because on that same show they also had some ghost hunters come in and do their thing, and so in that show, in my impression was I was presented with two different ways of going about this. One was the traditional, walking around with EMF meters, digital recorders, and all that stuff in the dark. The other way was, let's set up some experiments here to test what's going on. And the scientists and the engineers aspect of this investigation were doing that stuff. And they did. They had the cameras going, but they had thermal imagers going, which, is obviously, in everybody's opinion, is the thing to have. It's just that,
just run out and buy a $7,000 thermal imager.
Yeah, well, obviously can't do that. But they also... had the great sound equipment, and they set it up to catch things. They did catch the only thing they caught that they showed was a little mist coming from the roof, and they quickly concluded that was from the rain coming down that night and leaking and creating noises and also creating a thermal thing. It was mist. It was a mist. That's fine. You can't beat that explanation. You have to rule it out first. You've got to get that stuff out of the way before you even go. So if we were to look at this whole thing in a reasonable, grounded approach, in my opinion, we have a fascinating field of study here surrounding so-called paranormal events that are probably not paranormal at all, but it's still fascinating because it involves better understanding the human condition, the way people think and the way that we work and the power.
And most importantly, the way the mind works, because what we're looking at is not only the psychological intangible things, but it's going to be down to the basic neurochemistry of the mind. And I mean, when we talk about things like, and we've talked about it on the show, like abduction cases, and I think we can safely hypothesize that when abductees are doing what they call the mind melt, where they're either being placed under hypnosis or whatever process is being used, that something is happening there that is not only affecting a person psychologically but physiologically. So that there's this large component of what's physical as well as what's psychological.
Mm-hmm. So, hey, you know, if our listeners have any thoughts on this and you'd like to get in on this discussion, we'd love to have you call up, share your thoughts on it. You can use that click-to-talk button on your screen, or you can call us on your phone. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. And, call up and say hi. Again, it's laid back, nothing to be fearful of. Don't be shy. Call us up and talk, because Grant's getting lonely.
Yeah, and, you know, don't be afraid to disagree with us, because one of the things I'd like to talk about is I think people who come from a more traditional, not a traditional approach, but some people have difficulty. I suggested one time, one of the things I wondered about was with EVPs. Mm-hmm. What if an EVP was nothing more than a person psychokinetically generating some sort of energy that can be interpreted by that device as a voice?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Valid.
So if that was really happening, you know, I mean, I'm just tossing it out there. You just throw it out a possibility.
You've offended me.
Well, I kind of hoped I would, but
you know, I'm sorry, but they're ghosts, and that's
well,
it.
That, you hit the nail on the head, Doug. That was the reaction. You know, some people say, no, that can't possibly be. Well, other people, more open-minded, are going, yeah, you know, maybe that's a possibility. And then what you do is you think out of the box, like, you know, Ingrid did.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was on our show and she was talking about different ways to conduct experiments, people say in the paranormal research field, I think you can only go to so many hauntings and do a group investigation, and pretty soon you're going like, I'm bored.
Yeah, I know.
Okay? Well, you know what? Think out of the box. If you really are serious about doing this research, try to replicate something. Or read some of these articles by Dr. Roll and a lot of the other folks that are in the field. And these articles are on the web, or if they're not on the web, you can certainly get them at the libraries. There is a journal of, I think, parapsychology. And most, you know, libraries will have that. If they don't, go to the nearest college library. You can read it for free.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than one subject. And these are papers that are submitted by researchers so that other researchers can take a look at them and critique them. And sometimes, you know, just literally destroy the theory. And then on the other hand, all of a sudden the whole community comes to the awareness that, wow, this is some spectacular stuff. But it sometimes takes some little guy on the side who's really thinking out of the box.
Yes. And, you know, that's the thing. You know, you're talking about it can get boring and under these traditional investigations like so many of us have done, because, you know, there's just nothing going. And I think the reason is that we don't have a purpose, quote unquote, a real decent purpose in mind, like an experiment, usually. I'm sure some groups probably do, but we haven't. And so look at, like you'd mentioned, Ingrid Irwin and her EVP research. I mean, in my opinion, that falls well into the realm of parapsychology, because it's trying to understand what's going on. You know, could it be a mind, a human mind-generated thing? I mean, so can we create these experiments to go to some of these places to rule different things out, much like they did with the sound generator at 19 hertz, or with people who are predisposed or not predisposed to believing?
Yeah, and I think what's really important is how Dr. Dr. Irwin approached it. She approached it in a scientific manner and used all of the classical steps to an experiment to try to get the data that she needed. And, you know, I mean, that's the way to do it. And what I mean, not thinking out of the box, look, think of different ways that you can conduct an investigation where, you know, like the simple investigation we talked about one time, and I saw it on a program many years ago, where they were doing it with dowser, people who were dowsing. Mm-hmm. And they blindfolded them. And once they blindfolded them, they didn't come up with the hits anymore.
Yeah.
And we've talked about doing an experiment with people who we think have psychic abilities. And, you know, all it takes, there's a cheap experiment for you. You have people with blindfolds.
Well, here's a question just real quick, real quick to our audience. Have you conducted an investigation and used some sort of an experiment? Have you come up with an experiment? If you have, why not give us a call and share it with us? Go ahead, Grant.
Yeah. You know, it's just, you know, the simple experiment could be somebody says a room in the house is haunted. Or they've seen activity in two rooms in the house. Well, you could just take styrofoam objects, a little ball, something that's very lightweight, put it on a bed,
mm-hmm.
and set your recorder.
Mm-hmm.
And measure it exactly where it is. I mean, be precise.
Use tape,
do whatever you need to do. And if those things move around, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting result. Now see if you can duplicate it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, I mean, obviously, different investigations require different things depending on what you're dealing with. You know, you might be in a commercial building or something. You know, so you might be in a purportedly haunted location. Well, can you develop some type of an experiment to rule things out? And if you're really into the research aspect, then that's exactly the lines you're going to be thinking about. Rather than just go and investigating some haunting, why not develop an experiment to either prove or disprove different hypotheses that are out there or that you've come up with? You know, that's the point of research. I mean, you know, we can only go do so many reported hauntings. Hey, you know, we've got a ghost, come help. I mean, yeah, the high strangeness cases obviously are, you know, more interesting, but so many of these cases, and this is again just my opinion, but so many of these cases that we've investigated really come back down to human psychology and problems and issues within the home, you know, toxic relationships, addiction, alcoholism, and on and on. And I mean, as well as you know this, Grant, that when, you know, if you have an alcoholic issue going on, I mean, they've got DTs that could easily cause hallucinations.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds of funky stuff, you know, yep. Coming around. So,
well, some psychiatric disorders or borderline disorders, you know, they have subtle characteristics, and a person, you know, might be fooled at the beginning, you know, when, you know, but sooner or later, you know, that information will come out. But, you know, it's really fascinating, because what we really need to do is, if you keep all these things in mind, this interconnectivity, and, you know, try to, if you don't know much about quantum physics, try to learn something about it.
Yeah.
It seems like the more you read about it, the more interesting and fascinating it becomes, and how infinite the possibilities are. And also, I find it very comforting in the sense that we're all part of this wonderful, marvelous tapestry, you know, and that, you know, it's just too bad a lot of folks don't see it that way. I mean, because that seems to be the case.
Mm-hmm. And we are connected. And, you know, there's so much of all of this. That's why I say that anomalous research, when you really think about it, when you really boil it down, why are we doing it? To better understand the human condition. And I feel that it encompasses so much about humans and human relationships, and just what it means to be a human being. That's really what this is all about. We're trying to understand us. And of course, trying to understand those big questions, you know, where do we come from? Who are we? Where are we going? In some way, some fashion that makes sense, you know. And then that's what all research is about, better understanding the human condition and how we're all connected, because we are. I mean, all it takes is some natural disaster to figure out how we're all connected and how we depend on each other.
Yeah, and you know, the thing of it is that with the parapsychology angle and Dr. Rule, all that stuff is taken into account. You know, it's not something that, you know, it's a known variable within the whole formula, the whole mixture. And, you know, and when you think about it, I mean, and if you're not familiar with Dr. Rule's cases, by all means, familiarize yourself, mm-hmm. because they were groundbreaking cases.
Tina
if you're not
Reich.
Familiar with Tina Reich's case is a very interesting case, because there were things that went on there that were just absolutely remarkable. Now, there are people that said that she faked some things and, you know, was the center of attention. Well, that may be true, but there were other things that happened, if you're not totally familiar with the case, that are really kind of mind-boggling, like how furniture was rearranged, heavy furniture one day when Tina wasn't even there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that doesn't mean that, you know, something unscrupulous went on and you know what, that somebody didn't come in and move stuff around, but the evidence seems to indicate that there was nobody there in the house when this stuff happened.
Yeah, and obviously you have to rule out the potential hoaxers, you know, the potential people who want to corrupt the evidence, but you know, good stuff, man. I mean, you know, it's a fascinating field, and if we can just spread the word, you know, get more people interested in the research aspect of it, the serious research, you know, creating experiments, coming up with hypotheses.
Well, you know, Doug, I really think that the longer, and if the people that are serious about research in this field will find themselves drawn closer to parapsychology, or will evolve a closer a relationship with parapsychology, just based on what they're going to find.
I agree. You know, and that's really what Paranexus is all about. You know, it's not an ego thing. You know, it's not a ghost hunting group. It's a professional, serious, anomalous research association for those who want to conduct this kind of research. And, you know, that's what we formed it for. I mean, that's why it's here. We want people to come and share hypotheses. You know, come and talk to us about your ideas. You know, join us. That's what it's for. You know, let's sharpen each other. Let's do this thing together. Let's come up with concepts and at least to the point where we can have a some kind of strong anecdotal, if not proof, of what some of this stuff might be. And I think we're making some headway. I mean, that, again, the show that I mentioned, American Paranormal, when you do that, those kind of experiments with ELFs and low frequencies and infrasound and all that, and predisposition to belief in ghosts and so forth, when you're conducting experiments like that, you are making a deposit to the greater woodpile, if you will. You're leaving the woodpile higher than you found it. You're making some contributions that we haven't seen in decades, and that's what we've got to keep pushing.
Well, and you know, and the thing that's really nice about that program that you're talking about is if you rule out the psychological and then you focus on other aspects, and let's just take, for example, that golly gee willikers, that, you know, something actually was going on there that was outside of the parameters of the experiment. When you control it as best you can, well, then if it turns out that they do get some anomalous data, that's important, because they've done everything in the world they can to rule out any possibility of that occurring.
Well, let's talk about another aspect of parapsychology that we have touched on before, but I wanted to get your input on this, Grant. It's the area of possessions. You know, if we think about this for a minute, we've got somebody who is possessed, let's assume for a moment. Tell me, you know, I mean, there's obviously somebody else in their head or inside them, whatever, they're possessed. what's the difference between that and dissociative identity disorder, multiple personality disorder, from your knowledge base?
Well, I think that they may be two entirely different animals, in the sense that I'm not so sure that somebody who has an actual feels possessed doesn't have a major psychotic disorder to some degree. People can have episodic psychotic disorders and they never have them again.
Right.
And so let's assume that you have somebody, a man, woman, but particularly a child. One of the most famous cases was a child. And, you know, when the doctor said they couldn't get him to cure, they probably threw up their hands and said, well, bring in a priest. I think it happened about 1948 or so. A lot of it was based, a lot of stuff from that story was based, The Exorcist took parts of. But I don't know. For me personally, I don't believe that people are possessed by demons.
Right.
I believe they're possessed by their belief system.
Their own.
But if their belief system is, because there is such a thing as childhood schizophrenia here now too, that if their belief system is strong enough, so if you're raised a Catholic and you believe in the duality, the Christian duality of good and evil, and your life is coming apart, or you're a confused kid, or you're being abused, or who knows what the psychodynamics are going on, when all fails, you're going to go to your belief system. But if you are actually delusional or you're psychotic, you may interpret those behaviors, or you may see or hear things that may come from maybe guilt. And what happens is that it manifests itself as a demonic possession. And then also that kind of lets that person, it's like very cathartic for them, because they can let out all kinds of negative energy that's been there and really go on the wild. Because if you're the epitome of the devil, man, you know.
Well, obviously.
You know, everything's up for grabs. You can do everything evil that you want. So I think it's very intricate and very complex. And for me personally, I don't think there's any person that's ever been possessed by the devil.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, I've been thinking a lot about this lately, and obviously there's some people who have the dissociative identity disorder, but that's even controversial among among science or among psychology. You know, and it's very, very rare, from my understanding of it.
Well, remember too that disorder is, you know, you would see that kind of a disorder with somebody who is trying to escape. Like, I mean, the classic Sybil.
Yeah.
You know, that we all saw, that was a dissociative disorder, because it's a what we used to call split personality, multiple personality. But in reality, a lot of these poor folks have been subject to physical and extreme psychological trauma. And so as a result, that reality is just too brutal for them to take. And so they disassociate, feelings of, you know, my world's unreal, I can't possibly be here. And somehow that manifests itself in sometimes different personalities that can cope with the situation they're facing.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure that this... I mean, if you think about it, and I've mentioned this on the program before, in hypnosis there's such a thing called parts therapy. And just for those who haven't heard of it before, what you essentially do as a hypnotist or hypnotherapist is in working with a person, you essentially bring forth, once they're in hypnosis, you bring forth that part of them that... you know, whatever is doing whatever. It could be a weight issue, it could be smoking, it could be whatever, you know, self-esteem, it could be whatever it is. You ask that part of them to come forward. You can even say, what's your name? And sometimes they'll even give you a name, like, you know, and it doesn't need to be a proper name. It can be a thing. It can be dread. It can be, abhorrence, whatever. And so that part of them comes forward, and you deal with that part of them. So it's kind of a technique is what it is in parts therapy. Well, in my thinking, it makes sense that, you know, you get somebody who's under a lot of stress. They have cognitive dissonance. And if you're not familiar with what that is, it's essentially something that happens when you repress or suppress what you ought to do because of strong pressure outside. I mean, that's one of the ways of defining it. And it happens a lot in cults. You know, it happened to me when I was in the cult. I mean, you know, there's a part of you deep inside that knows what you should be doing. But because of the strong belief system and the strong social network around you, it just suppresses that, and it has to manifest somewhere. It has.
What does it tell you about the power of the mind? If the mind can do that to a person, okay, what isn't it capable of doing? I mean, so when we then that takes us right back to how can we say if the mind is capable of making people feel ill, even having people die, because you know, like in some, like even in Haiti, or in countries where they have a strong belief in voodoo, if somebody whoops a curse on you and that person believes they're going to die, they die.
Yep. Yeah, it does happen. I mean, die of a broken heart.
That's the power of belief.
Yes, it is. It is the power of belief, and as I've long said, belief is the most potent force in the universe. Mm-hmm. And so, if these people who are undergoing all this stress or cognitive dissonance or anything related to those kinds of things, it could manifest as outwardly as a lot of things, you know, rashes or asthma or possession, you know.
Or things are being moved in my room.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, I'm hearing voices in my room or something, you know. So, you know, the mind is just an incredible thing. And I think I maybe one of these days we're going to find out just how wonderful it really is and, you know, that, you know, we really aren't using our full capabilities. But maybe we're not ready yet, and maybe we still have to evolve. Who knows?
Part of evolution, you know. Well, cool. Interesting discussion.
I hope we set the stage for Dr. Roll, because he's the expert on all this stuff. And, you know, last time he was here, it was a real delight and a real pleasure to have
distinguished, huh?
An eminent gentleman like himself, yes, and distinguished, and who has really been a pioneer into parapsychology, and you know, been a courageous pioneer, because you know, it's not easy doing stuff that people have been that when they're not comfortable, they laugh at.
Right, and you know, in parapsychology, you're fighting scientific community, you're fighting, you know. If you're trying to be a legitimate scientist and you're fighting them, it's not always easy. And for those of you who may not be familiar with Dr. Roll, if you're familiar with the term RSPK, he's the one that coined it, recurrent spontaneous psychokinetic. So he's up in years, and we're hoping to have him on shortly. You know, hopefully, if he's free, we're going to try to get him on next week. If not, then in the upcoming week or two, we'll try to get him back.
Yeah, and in an exciting world of radio, internet radio, these sort of things happen, and those of you who have been with us for a while know that occasionally guests can't make it. So, you know, we try to fill in as best we can.
So, had an interesting discussion, actually just one more of the many discussions that Grant and I have on things time to time, frequently, actually. And so, you know, I'm just going to put in another plug for Paranexus. We'd love to have you come join us. If you've been a past member, we'd love to have you come back and share your unique person with us, your unique outlook, your expertise, your ideas, and hopefully together we can really make some inroads into this, folks. I mean, Paranexus is not fly by night. It's not going to be gone tomorrow. It's here for the duration, and you know, we can only make it something together. It can't be made something single-handedly or just with just a few. We need everybody contributing, because this is for all of us, and we hope that you will come and be a part of that. You know, so visit us at Paranexus.org. We have ParanexusAcademy.org. Paranexus is an association of anomalous researchers. serious researchers. You can take courses on Paranexus Academy. We have several courses under development. Ingrid's developing the EVP research. Dave's doing the photography, both certification courses. I know Kevin, board member Kevin Costa, is who studied under Dr. Roll, is writing an introduction to parapsychology. So, you know, we're looking for instructors, too. If you want to teach something and you've got that, you know.
Yep. Or if you want to be on the show, let us know. You know, we're always welcome that. We even welcome opposite opinions. But most of all, we appreciate everybody out there who supports Paranexus, who wants to be part of us and, you know, shares the same vision. That's what's really important. And, you know, we welcome everybody in. We believe in diversity. And, you know, we're always, always willing to listen to your opinions. And even, you know, we'll look at your research or your evidence and try to be open-minded, but we're never going to mislead you. We'll tell you straight up. So thanks for everything you've done for us, folks, because we do appreciate it.
Yeah. And for members, I just added the chat room to Paranexus. So if you're a member, you can go in there. There's several rooms if you want to use it. It's there and it's flash chat. It's nice. It's a nice chat room. Also, I did post about this. We redesigned the research assistant as well, and it's a little more, I don't know, I think it's better design. It's easier. It doesn't take so much space on one page, but it's better that way. I also redesigned the page that people can go and check certifications, those who've been certified. So, you know, we continue to you know, tweak things. Mike Jones is working hard away at the new blog module. We're hoping to deploy that here in the next 2 to 3 weeks or so. And it's coming along good. So we've got more things in the works. Love to have you. We're getting close to out of time, so we're going to just go ahead and sign off. We hopefully will have Dr. Roll on next week or week after, something like that, and we will post that on paranexus.org. We appreciate your time tonight. We look forward to having you back on the show with us again next week. So have
yeah, fun. And thanks for everybody, you know, participating in the chat room.
Yeah, it's been fun. Take care, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Have a great weekend.
It's Paranexus Universe.